Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello and welcome to Is It My ADHD? The podcast about what it really feels like to have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. My name is Grace Timothy and I'm a writer. I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD until I was 37, after years of struggling with difficult traits and behaviours that I could never understand. Just like the 2 million women thought to be living with undiagnosed ADHD in the UK today. I want to better understand what ADHD feels like for women and non-binary people, in whom ADHD is so often missed, thanks to the fact that the diagnostic criteria and research is heavily skewed to the white male case study. On this podcast, I speak to some incredible people about their lived experience of ADHD, looking at how it can affect relationships, work, parenthood, socialising, and self-esteem. My hope is that we can spread awareness of ADHD in women and non-binary people, and that you'll find some comfort in knowing you're far from being alone. Because with the right support and understanding, we can be truly amazing. Today, we're going to change things up a little bit. My guest is Stacey Heal. She is a fashion academic, mother of two, and author of Now Is Not the Time for Flowers, the memoir she wrote during the 2 years after her husband Greg died of cancer in 2021. In 2023, Stacey was diagnosed with ADHD. So we've been talking about this for a little while now. The reason this is going to be different is because I'm basically wanting to answer all of the messages in my inbox that have asked, where are you? Where's the podcast? What's going on? Which have all been very gratefully received. And I think there's a lot of support out there that I didn't even anticipate there being. Essentially, when I started the podcast, I knew that ADHD was going to impair my abilities in various ways. But if I'm totally honest with you, I felt like I'd largely mastered ADHD. Like, not only had I done all the research, I felt very self-aware, but I was also just feeling quite together and well-practiced, if that's the right word, to the point where I'd look at the supposed impairments identified in my assessment report and just think, nah, like, I've got this. This turned out to be entirely a big fat illusion. Last year, I experienced the burnout to end all burnouts in terms of my timeline. I hadn't experienced anything like it before. And I think it just sort of upended everything. And what I needed to do then from then on is focus on just getting through the day, then focusing on looking after my family and then getting back to work and, paying the mortgage. So what's really lovely about today is that Stacey creates a safe space for me to be able to talk about that experience. We've both been through it in different ways. And I think hopefully it's something that resonates with so many of you. Not that I want you to have experienced burnout, but it's a sort of shared experience that I feel like so many of us will really have in common. So I'm going to kind of hand over to Stacey. Stacey Heal, who we've been talking for a few years now.
It is years.
And it's not meeting years. Through ADHD, right? Like just...
No, we met... I think we met through our fashion history.
Yeah.
And so the ADHD thing kind of came about in a strange way. And actually, I mean, I've kind of been badgering you about ADHD for a while because it was actually this podcast and your episode with Stacey Duguid, another fashionista, that led to my diagnosis in last year. Yeah, about a year ago now, at the beginning of 2023. Yeah, that's right. And I listened to that episode. I was just listening to it about, you know, because I'm a fan of Stacey's and I was a fan of yours, so like, you know, all of the fashion girls together. She was talking about lots of different things. And I heard her basically describe my life. And I was actually on holiday at the time. I remember so vividly being on the veranda. I was on holiday. It was only a few months after Greg died, actually, that I listened to it. I was on holiday with my family. I was on my own and I was in tears listening to it because I just recognised every single thing that she said. And and then it took, you know, the process we all go through, which is that investigating all the different routes and looking things up and recognizing all these different areas that have manifested in our lives. And then I had my diagnosis and so thank you, Grace.
Oh, I mean, such a pleasure. And I can't believe that, is it my ADHD is on the veranda? Like that's
on. Yeah, is holiday listening.
Of course it is. We all want to have a bit of a nervous breakdown in the swimming pool while our kids are faffing around.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think also this is the first time we've met in person.
It is, which is bizarre.
It's so weird. But also, I think quite indicative of my relationships online tend to be quite intimate relationships, because we do get straight into the nitty-gritty ADHD life of, like, not, you know, how was your holiday? When are you getting a haircut? What are you doing for Christmas?
Yeah.
It is always straight in with, like,
tell me your trauma.
Yeah, like, list your traumas, you know, in a chronological order, please. And then I will immediately interrupt you with mine. Like, let's just be honest. So I felt like you were the ultimate person to, like, sort of kid glove me through this conversation. Because it is, it's like, there's lots of triggers in there for people.
Yeah.
It's complex. And also it is like the ADHD feeling around growing up feeling incapable and all that stuff, and wanting to be masking yourself to be like the most capable person.
Oh my God. So I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I totally hear you. And I absolutely think what you're doing with this now, like being the guest on your own podcast to talk about these things that have happened for you, I think it's incredibly brave. I think what you were saying at the intro of that masking and holding on to everything and just keeping going is, and feeling like you've completed ADHD, I think that happens when you get to talk about things you think you're a little bit of a master of something. I have that a little bit with grief. Mm. You know, I talk about my husband dying and you rattle off these stories and they're quite traumatic, but as you're so used to talking about them, they just trot off your tongue. So you kind of feel like, oh, I've got this. Mm. And then something will happen that will just knock you over. And I think it sounds like that's what happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, you have a podcast about ADHD.
And like, I didn't know I had it.
Yeah, like, you're the master. So, you know, I was one of those people as well who was contacting you going, are you doing any more episodes? As I'm a big time fan and listen to all of them. So I wanted to know what's going on with you. And it sounds like so did a lot of other people.
Yeah, which is so lovely.
Yeah.
And didn't feel like pressure. It just felt like, oh yeah, that's what I want to be doing as well. But I just, you know, well, we'll get into it. But I think when you go through burnout, you just go into survival mode, don't you? And like, just trying to put the pieces back together so that you can function. And then like everything else has to be extraneous. So yeah, but we're, you know, we're getting there. It's all good.
Well, I know me personally, I'm very nosy as well. Like, I would really love to know what happened in that process for you. It sounds like, from the conversations we've had privately, it sounds like that was quite a complicated process and very slow, and that maybe you didn't understand what was going on. And I think it would be really useful for other people listening to hear about your experience and what that looked like. Because I think sometimes we're so busy and our brains work in a very different way that sometimes we might not recognise that within ourselves.
100%. And I think, like, to ground this in the science as well, I spoke to Dr. Mo, who
will know.
He was my assessing psychiatrist, but he's done a lot of work with us on the podcast. And now that I'm writing a book, he's helping a little bit with that as well. So we've been having lots of chats and I talked to him about burnout, and it's not a validated diagnosis. It's a group of symptoms they see so commonly in the clinic. And it's normally at the point of burnout is when they most often assess people, because that's when you realize something's going on. And him telling me, because I didn't tell him what I'd experienced, I just let him tell me what the symptoms were. And I was just like, oh, okay. So actually everything I experienced, if I had that list in front of me, I would have known it was happening like 2 months before it happened. Because the buildup is so classic, like it's so textbook what happened to me. And again, here I am thinking I'm so special because I went through this unique thing, and it's like, no, babe, you just didn't do the right research. So I can get into that, and I hope, like, I'll talk about as well a little bit about what he said about it, because I think that is, again, we always want to be grounding this in the science that, you know, yes, it is your ADHD, but there are lots of things going on. You can go through burnout if you've got anxiety or depression or all these things. So essentially, where I've been is I was in a bit of a hole and then I kind of crept out of it, but it all kicked off probably after COVID. So it's a long time ago now.
When do we judge the end of COVID, what does...
Oh, I mean, it's still going, isn't it? But like, I think essentially that lockdown period was like perfect for me. And I realise now, like, just having my whole world revolve around my kid, even like Rich, bless him, because he was working at the hospital, he was barely home. You know, it was like, it was really weird. But it, in terms of my needs and like what I needed to do each day, it was so simple. And I thrived. Like, I did extra things. Like, I went out of my way to do extra things and I achieved everything on my list every day. And they were... It was like a really satisfying time. And I felt like I'd connected with my daughter in a different way, like all of that stuff. So what I think has happened since then is the building blocks of life have slowly started to stack up again. And I see it everywhere. You see it in the streets. People are once again, like, head down, rush, 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 which we know doesn't always suit us. So after COVID, and I've been on furlough, which was like the best thing I've ever experienced. That was such a privilege and an amazing thing. Went back to work, all fine. I had... but making my life progressively smaller without knowing it. And this is something that Dr. Mo talks about a lot is, you know, I thought I was fulfilling all my ambitions. I was still having the career I wanted and stuff, but actually I was doing it from home. I'd gone from being, you know, working for magazines to being freelance to then doing less and less of that. And I'd got to a point where I was kind of over the hustle, like even that I couldn't really keep up with anymore. But instead of going like, I can't do it, I would just pivot. And we all do this a lot. There's a lot of pivoting in ADHD.
Oh, God, absolutely.
Like, career and otherwise. So my life was, like, me at home with my laptop, getting as much work as I could done in the school hours kind of thing. And I went out and got myself a part-time job, which was super simple, lovely, really nice to be back with people actually in an office, less isolated and all that stuff. But ultimately, like, the laptop went down at 5:30 and that was the end of that job, which I've never had in my life. You know the same thing, I'm
absolutely.
Sure. Like, up till 3 a.m. to do creative things. Amazing. So it was the first time I'd really been able to manage myself, I think, better. But the old ambitious voice in the background meant that I made that job essentially grow a bit and change a bit and chased bigger dreams and all that kind of stuff. So without going into detail of what I do and who I work for and stuff, it got bigger. And it was amazing. And I was thriving off that hyper-focus.
Did you instigate that?
Yes.
You actively instigated it in terms of workload or responsibility or job title or
all of the above.
Or working hours? You were kind of thinking, this needs to be more,
and
bigger,
not
bigger.
One person would ever have put pressure on to say, like, you should be doing more. Like, that's just not the kind of environment I was in. It all came from me. And you know, people around me would point it out. Colleagues would be like, you all right? And I'd be like, yeah, because I love it. Because, you know, it's so satisfying when you do something that you're good at because you've had so many years previous of being told that you're not capable, you don't have common sense, you don't have this, you can't keep up. So when you're doing something and you're bashing through a to-do list, for example, and you're like making change happen and like, it's so...
The joy.
So good. Yeah, it's such a rush. I call it the pure ecstasy of hyperfocus.
Oh,
I'm trying to explain it to Rich, like, back off, don't talk to me.
Well, it's kind of like a meditative flow. Mm. It's like you're in a zone where everything is aligned. There's no, I mean, I don't know if people who don't have ADHD have this where you're going through your life and it just feels like a bit crunchy, like kind of banging into things mentally or emotionally. And when you're in that flow and time doesn't exist and there's like a palpable energy that's flowing through you. I mean, that's
feels so
joyous,
good.
Isn't
yes,
it? And,
yeah.
I suppose there's a down. It's so wonderful, but I suppose there are downsides to it.
There's a physical cost, like for sure. So that all kind of culminated in eventual, like the summer. Basically, it came to like June 2023, and the wheels started to wobble. I wouldn't say anything fell off, but like, I just did weird stuff. I went and got all my hair cut off. I just kept doing strange things that were, it was like panic changes. I was trying to like change things because I knew things weren't quite right. I then got like shingles, which is like a clear physical sign
that,
of like, babe, you stop.
That's the sign, isn't it? Of, that's immune system.
Yeah.
That's
your,
body screaming at you to just... hang on a minute.
Yeah, down tools.
You just need to stop.
It was crazy. So shingles, COVID, all in the space of like 6 weeks or something. But I kept going, didn't stop. I didn't want to stop, like I was having a nice time. But then, I was like answering emails whilst looking after my kid. There were no boundaries left anymore. There was, you know, we went away on a supposed like quote marks holiday, which was just me going back to do some emails, you know, every 5 minutes. And I kept that holiday to 3 days. because I was like, I can't afford any more time away. So everyone was suffering. Everyone was impacted by these crappy decisions. And then I started waking up at 4 a.m. And I'm actually pretty good at sleeping. So that was rather than thinking like, what's going on? This doesn't feel right. I was like, oh my God, I've got like 4 extra hours in the day to do stuff. Like, this is immense.
Do you mean work?
Yeah.
You were thinking, yeah. I need to get up to work.
Yeah. It's like an addiction. It's really weird. Like, and someone else is benefiting.
Was that coming from a place of, like you were saying, that hyper-focus for you was a real joy? Was it coming from that place of, I'm so excited to start my day, I want to put all of my energy into this? Or was it coming from a place of fear? Because sometimes I think that can really happen within a job scenario with ADHD, is that you're so worried about being found out because you are terrified that people will start to clock that you are scrambling around in your head and it's starting to show, and that maybe you need to put in more hours than everyone else just so that you can keep up.
Yeah.
And I think 100%. They're coming, I don't know, maybe it was a mixture of both.
It was like a high and a fear, which all feed into it. And it all feels just like cortisol and adrenaline, doesn't it?
It's all dopamine.
Oh my God, it is. That's exactly it. So after all of these kind of slow, gradual things of like, things were breaking. And then actually my working memory started to fail me as well a bit. So things were actually going wrong. Not so much with work, more like, you know, getting my kid to the right place at the right time with the right bag. All of those kind of things that I work really hard to kind of juggle normally just were starting to drop. And yeah, I think I was maintaining at work. My colleagues may say otherwise. But anyway, it was really hardcore. And then I had one particularly hard weekend at work. And on the Monday, I didn't eat for like 3 or 4 days. I had like back and stomach pain because of just obviously being dehydrated and stuff. So that I couldn't stand up straight. My head was blurry. Like, I couldn't see properly. But I also wasn't engaging emotionally. So I wasn't like, I was crying a lot at the beginning and then it all just stopped and there was just nothing. I had nothing in me. I was numb.
What were you crying about?
I was crying in the panic of not being able to do things and not being right and not being good enough to do stuff.
Oh, wow.
And letting people down. Nothing had happened. Like, no one would say, oh, you did this and therefore, and everyone was mad with you and that's why you were upset. Nothing.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering of, like, was there any kind of key moment, like a cataclysmic, even if it wasn't in front of people, even if it was at your home, where you just, there was like a breaking point that you could look at to be like, it was then that I knew.
I think there were so many.
Oh, good.
There was one moment where I was in a car park and I'd lost my car, and it was a big car park, and it was nighttime, but I just walked around and cried for 2.5 hours trying to find it. That was when the crying started, and it didn't really stop for a good, like, maybe a week. And then, yeah, like, this week of just, I was functioning. Like, I was picking my daughter up from school. I was making snacks. I wasn't, like, nothing had changed outwardly, but I was just done in. And I wasn't, like, registering things. I wasn't, like, interacting with people. I wasn't engaging with anything. I became very aware of, like, being switched off, but also having like very strong sensory things. So needing to be like wrapped up in cozy wool things rather than being exposed to anything. And yeah, there was a lot of cocooning.
Did you have any thought processes during that time? Did you have any kind of internal thoughts about what is happening here? Or was everything just white noise?
I think I still wouldn't register, but because Rich has said, like, this is burnout, no? Like, you've worked really, really hard, and now that's come to a bit of an end for a bit, and now you're, like, recovering, processing, whatever. And I was like, I can't even think about any of that stuff. Like, it was how I remember certain traumas being afterwards, where you just disengage, and then you're just, like, in shutdown mode, to protect yourself, I don't know. And I'd say it almost aligns a bit with depression in that way of, like, I don't even need to get up. Like, there's nothing to engage with. There's no joy to be had or anything. But just obviously active enough to keep things going with my kid. If she wasn't there, I would have just gone to bed and not got up for a few weeks, like 100%. And I just, things like cooking, I'm never very good at, but it got much, much worse. And, you know, there was definitely no food in the house where before I would have thought about stuff like that. Like, basic stuff just went out the window. So it was like the build up was this insane dance that got more and more and more chaotic. And then the fallout was just like this nothingness in comparison, because it had all been so fast and then suddenly it was all slow, and that was almost worse. And I don't even really know when I registered, oh, this is burnout. I think I just thought, I'm really tired because I've just done this stuff at work and now I'm like going to relax for a bit. But obviously, do we relax ever? Like, I'm not even really sure how to do that.
No, I don't know how to do that.
So, no. Even like, I couldn't engage with telly or books or listening to podcasts even, or music or anything. I was just like kind of slack-jawed, I want to say, sat on a sofa somewhere just looking a bit confused. And that's what happened. And it took so long to come back from that. It was like being out of it for a while.
One thing that really resonates for me in listening to what happened to you is that for my whole life, I had this thing that I would go into that I could never explain. I didn't understand it, where it was the freeze mode, where I could be doing something, I could be like head on into something, couldn't get enough of it. And then literally an hour later, I will be sat on a bed, literally staring at a wall for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it's this freeze. It's literally like, I don't know, a funk. It feels like your brain has disconnected. I remember saying that to someone years ago, of someone's unplugged me and I'm almost like a robot that's powered down, and I've just got to kind of, I'm not thinking about anything. I don't know what I'm thinking about. And when I kind of come to a little bit, time has gone, and it's not like I've been pondering things or thinking or asleep or anything like that. It almost sounds like what you went through was like this huge version of that, where your body just went, nope.
Yeah.
I'm powering down for weeks.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of done. Well, I can't do anymore.
It's almost also like, I love an analogy and a visual.
Good. Me too.
Like the robot, it's a bit like, you know, wind socks, you know, those kind of weird things that they have outside, like car dealerships, yes, where they're inflated by, you know, whatever they're inflated by. And that all of the air just came out and it's like flip. 100% exactly like that. It is a disconnect of some kind. What scared me was like, this feels so much more. And is it most likely because I'm now 40 and I have other demands on me? So I am a mum, you know, I have other jobs, I have other responsibilities, I have a podcast, you know, and I have friends. Like, I did not speak to one person on a social basis for probably about 6 weeks. I just couldn't. I had like no capacity for anyone else's feelings or thoughts. And that's so shit. Like, you know, if something awful had happened to one of my friends during that time, I worry that I wouldn't have been able to do very much about it. And also that my husband and my kid, like 100%, no matter what I do masking wise, they know me well enough to know like, oh my goodness. Like, you know.
I wonder if it's... if it's not even just that age thing, but like you said, it is that different level of responsibility.
Yeah.
That there isn't the chance to have those mini times, because you've got to get up, you've got to get the breakfast done, you've got to do the school run, you're thinking about the money coming in, especially if you're doing, you know, a very hyphen-based portfolio kind of career where you're like, oh, there's this pot of money and then this pot of money coming in. You're constantly thinking about that kind of stuff, which you generally didn't have to think so much about.
So true.
So when you were younger, so you could kind of think, oh, do you know what? Fuck it. I don't, you know, I can just slob out for 5 days now. Mm-hmm. You can't do that when you're older because there are those considerations.
Yeah, so true. And the expectations placed on you are different, aren't they? Like,
yeah,
you know, you do need to power up a bit, and you can't like necessarily solve things with a mate with a glass of wine in a, I can't even think, where do you get a glass of wine from? A bar. There you go. Jesus, it's been so long. Yeah, you can't kind of do those little bits that you might have done as coping mechanisms in the past. It's like, you know, there are so many more expectations and they're deeper, I think, than they were. But then I think, like, in the burnout story, I don't ever want anyone on the outside to feel like it was a fuck up on my part because I didn't do enough to look after myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is down to me. It isn't down to anyone else. But it was all for, like, trying to be the best possible person that I could be. And, like, yeah, I didn't get coaching. I didn't go for access to work. I didn't do any of those things. I know about all of them and I've researched them quite heavily and I've spoken to loads of people who have them, but I didn't think I needed it.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to have such a big fuck up or such a big cataclysmic moment to realise like, oh, I do need to re-examine what I'm doing here. Like, for me, it's just 100% going back to work and being like, I need to work the days that I'm contracted to work. And they were like, yeah, you do. Like, what are you talking about? Obviously, you didn't need to do that. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm actually going to do it now. And they're like, well, yeah, we'd hope so. Like, stop being weird about it. Or like, yeah, you know, Rich would say like, you know, are you working now? Have you done your whatever it is, 2.5? That's the other thing. Sorry. Also, I'm part time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's not even like I was a 5-day a week going into 7. The reason that I kept that part time and didn't add to it and didn't say like, oh, actually, do you know what? I'm doing 5 days a week. Is it all right to up it? Was because I was using those 2 days to do all the things that I knew I had to do meetings wise and all that. And I was using the other 3 days to keep up. It felt like.
Okay.
So not keeping up with anyone, because my job is, it's a made up job. It's not connected to anyone else. No one's done it before. So there isn't a sense of like, this is the benchmark. You've got to get up to here. It was just in my head, this is what I need to achieve. And also then the endless possibilities of things that you could add to that in excitement.
Oh, I would think that any job I've ever been in, ever, in any industry, there's always more you could do.
Yeah, yeah.
The to-do list never, ever ends.
No.
And it's a fool's game to think that you are getting to the end of that list.
I know.
Also, I'm thinking about my experience, but I think we probably have quite similar backgrounds in that way of being a kid who was quite bright and being praised for that, and really that being like a really big dopamine kick, and then chasing that praise, chasing those grades, and then kind of feeling a bit nothingness when you achieve them, because then it's like, right, on to the next.
Yeah, that's so true.
On to the next, on to the next.
Particularly in the education system, right?
Oh,
where you do
absolutely.
GCSEs and then, okay, but now you're A-levels and now, you know, yeah, 100% did that. And I think also like I felt like I wasn't the prettiest. I wasn't athletic. I was incapable of so many things. Like that word just swims around so much. Not able to do sports, not able to do music, all of those things. Because now, like, obviously I understand why. I wasn't able to follow instructions properly. Mm. I still wasn't able to engage my body in the right way to kind of do things like sports. And like academia was like the thing that I could do. So I wasn't smart, but I was book smart. The chasing academia is where you set up that cycle of perfectionism.
And that then leads to, that follows you into the world of work, which I think is when you think about burnout in particular, I think that's where that fire starts to burn and then starts to, it also doesn't suit us in so many ways, that way of working in these bits and pieces and trying to juggle all these different things, because then it does lead to our brains going,
yeah, enough's enough.
I don't know how to do this.
Well, there's also like, once you've said you've got ADHD, if people know, colleagues, bosses, whatever, like that's a tricky path to tread. Like my mum, I remember her saying like, when I was first diagnosed, you don't have to share this on socials and you don't have to tell anyone. Like it might be tricky when you're looking for a job at some point. And I was like, as a journalist, we plumb the depths of our human experience. So I was like, I mean,
I can't even imagine not telling people
no.
that.
I was like, you know, colleagues could go into Waterstones and read about my episiotomy. Like, there's no, you know, that.
Yeah. This is small fry.
Yeah.
In comparison.
That horse has bolted. But, you know, there was that sense with, particularly with this burnout experience of like, I need you to know how capable I am. I know that you know I'm good at my job, and I know that you didn't see the stuff that was going wrong in my head because it wasn't real. But like, I don't want to show that vulnerability because I can't afford to, probably. Because the minute you start to see flaws,
yeah,
I will then
see in a different
blow
light.
Up. Yeah, and I don't want to do that because it's not actually about my working life. Like, I could carry on. I don't have to do 7 days a week to do that job. I was going above and beyond. I could do it probably in 3. We'll see. But like, I can't show that vulnerability. I need you to be aware how good I am.
Oh my God. Do you know what? This is why I love this podcast, is because they're over all the episodes that I've listened to. There are just so many of these moments where I go, oh, me too, me too, me too. I mean, that word, competence. I mean, that's at the heart of what I feel about things, because I have felt it's so weird to think that you are so competent and in other ways so utterly incompetent, and this real desperation to never want to be seen as incompetent. That is, for me, that's a deal breaker for me. And so I think the whole ADHD thing, it was such a double-edged sword, because on one hand, the diagnosis gave me this huge relief of being able to be like, oh my God, there's a reason. I had spent my whole life, I was diagnosed when I was 42. I spent my whole life secretly thinking that I was just a really, really shit person. And I think as you get older, it gets worse, because I think there is some leeway when you're younger. When you're a kid, when you're a teenager, when you're in your 20s, there's this leeway of how you act, especially when you become a parent. And then when you're in your 40s, it's like, fuck,
you should,
really
have, your
should have your shit together. There's these kind of secret things of like, I'm so fucking incompetent in just the most basic ways of being an adult, but at the same time so desperate to be seen as competent in the outside world. And that is, I mean, that's tiring. That's so tiring. And thinking about what you, going back to what you were saying about burnout, your burnout, that you were trying so hard, of that feeling of up I get at four to be cramming in these hours because I need to show other people and yourself, you know, that voice that's in your own head, that any ADHD diagnosis, you know, it calms that idea of how incompetent you are. But there's, after so many years, there's probably such a deep place in you that believes that.
I think so. And I think also there's a report that says, by the way, you are deficient in these areas. You are impaired in these areas. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's in black and white from a doctor. Like, you can't really get away from that. So then I think when the doubt starts to creep in, you've got that kind of evidence almost, which I had quite successfully been like, yeah, no, I totally get that you're saying that I have that, but I've actually overcome all of that. So
I've actually beat this, Dr. Mo.
I've completed that game. But I think like that's the shock, isn't it? I think if you don't see it coming, that was what shook me. Once I came out of that initial period of like, oh, I don't even care about anything now. When I was starting to come back to myself, it was like, but what do I do? I'm not going to quit my job. I have to pay the mortgage. Like, I do not have the privilege to be like, oh, fine, I'll just go and spar it up. Like, so there's that. Then there's the, I could go back to doing a really simple task. I won't ever achieve that, because I will always try and build on it, or I'll quit and do something more exciting, always. And I love what I do, like I really enjoy it. So what the hell are you supposed to do? Like, and it's not a medication thing even, because, you know, I mean, there is medication that I could take, but that's not going to stop me from getting burnout, basically.
Thank you so much for listening to this special episode of Is It My ADHD? In part two, Stacey and I will be back to discuss what happens next. How do we better manage our lives in order to avoid or mitigate burnout? And if we're resigned to working in this overstretched capacity, what should we be doing to refuel? Please do follow the podcast so that you'll see part two pop up as soon as it's released, and all future episodes, which I'm so happy to share that we are already working on. Thank you for your patience, for sticking around, and for being part of this incredible ADHD community with me. You can contact me via Instagram at Grace Timothy Writer, or Is It My ADHD, to continue the conversation.